Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
A new, young guy, inspirational, charismatic leader, and Intel Obama has got every bit of that. For you undecideds, take a chance. Take the chance. I don't think it's much of a chance. I think he's going to end up being a great leader. I really do. Just give him the chance. Thanks for listening to the Guy James Show today. Always a pleasure having you along with us. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, the inside scoop. All the news the government does not want you to know. Here's your host, Congressional Attorney Mark Levin.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It's good to be back from vacation, but unfortunately, while I was gone, Russia invaded Georgia, an event that I believe, indeed I fear, will be remembered by historians as the first event of the Second Cold War. While the nation was transfixed on the Olympics, watching the incredible feats of athletes like Michael Phelps, Russia was reasserting what it did back in the old bad Soviet days. It's a complex conflict, to be sure. It all has to do with rival ethnicities, ethnicities with ethnicities, minorities with minority countries. But that's the way the world has always been. Ethnicities fighting for their own autonomy within other ethnicities, that's been going on in human history for millennia. I want to talk this hour about the conflict, about what began it, its history, its past, and its future. What could have been done to prevent it, and where it will go from here. And let me be clear, I don't have much praise for almost anyone. I do have praise for one man, and I'll get to that in a second. But this is an event that I fear will mark the beginning of the end of America's world dominance. You see, we once were a superpower. We once were the sole superpower. We once were the country of greatest political and economic might in the world. But it's changed now. We're seeing, I think, the fall of the American empire. Now, I know this may sound extraordinary to you, but I want you to think about how much America's enemies have achieved in just a decade. Look at the most powerful countries in the world apart from us, Russia and China, even Iran and North Korea, our four greatest enemies, have all grown stronger. Why is that? Why is Russia, a country that was formerly tamed, that we celebrated the end of the Cold War, why is it growing strong again? Why is it now sending troops into neighboring Georgia? China is strong as well. Its economic might is tremendous. And indeed, the fact that it owns so much American debt means that if it calls its bonds in at any time, we would be helpless economically before it. Iran is seeking nuclear weapons. North Korea has nuclear weapons. What has caused all of our enemies to be stronger? One is the fact that, well, yes, these are people, these are countries, these are dictators that have world domination, or at least regional domination, on their mind. That's true. I do not think that Vladimir Putin or the leaders of China or Mahmoud Ahmadinejad or Kim Jong-il in North Korea, these are people clearly who have malevolence on their minds. I understand that. But if diplomacy is a chess game, to me the actions of Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea, they're relatively simple to understand, relatively one-dimensional. The difference is that the United States and the West can be a multidimensional player. What has made our enemies stronger? I would venture two things. Two things have made our enemies stronger. One, of course, is the war in Iraq. The United States, by putting all of our eggs in one basket, by putting so much of our military, indeed the great majority of our military in Iraq, with only a small part in Afghanistan, losing thousands of lives, costing hundreds of billions, indeed it will be trillions of dollars, in a misadventure that at the end of the day, what will it grant us? What little benefits we achieve in Iraq are already greatly outweighed by the cost. And let's face it, if anything, the Iraqi state is doing well while the United States is in peril. Indeed, it was just reported last week that the Iraqi government is running a surplus. Running a surplus, an $80 billion surplus over 4 years, while the United States suffers an economic recession. All our money going to them. And by putting all our military might in Iraq, it not only opens our military to being attacked by countries like Iran, it allows countries like Iran, and even more so countries like Russia, to recognize that we are a paper tiger. If Teddy Roosevelt said, "Speak softly and carry a big stick," the United States today speaks loudly and carries a very small stick. Our military might, indeed, is weaker than ever before. That's what you get when you put all your eggs in one basket and allows the dictators to grow. But as much as I think that our troops in Iraq is a major cause of our problems on the world stage today, as much as I think our massive deficits are a major cause of our problems in the world today, they pale in comparison of the greatest enemy America faces in the world today, and it impacts on all of them, Russia and China and Iran, and even small tin pot anti-American rulers like Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. The biggest America enemy today can be spelled in three letters. It is oil. The Bush administration's oil policy is not the first, but only the latest in successive administrations that failed to recognize that the greatest enemy to America today is oil. Indeed, if the Bush administration policies were done intentionally, realizing their outcome, the only word to describe them is treason. The fealty, the loyalty of this administration to big oil has not only impoverished the American people, it has made our enemies stronger than ever before. It is not a coincidence that Russia and Iran and even Venezuela have very large oil reserves. It is not a coincidence that our massive deficits are making China more powerful than ever today. It is not a coincidence that George Bush, our president, Dick Cheney, our vice president, and even Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice are all oil executives. They all have their loyalty to big oil. It's not a coincidence that all the campaign contributions, so much of them have come from big oil. And sure, this has made ExxonMobil the richest corporation in the world, making more profits last quarter than any corporation at any time in the history of the world. It is not a coincidence that all those no-bid contracts go to Halliburton, getting hundreds of billions of dollars, which enriches the portfolio of Dick Cheney, its former president, which enriches the portfolio of a number of his former friends, but makes the American people impoverished. No, the real danger of oil is not how much American blood and treasure goes to defend it, but the strength it gives our enemies. Even putative friends like Saudi Arabia that have a lot of enemies within their midst, including quite a number in the Saudi government, get richer every time American taxpayers go to the pump to fill up their SUV. They are giving money to our enemies. It is not at all an exaggeration to say that in the war in Iraq, we finance both sides. In the war in terrorism, we finance both sides. We finance Al-Qaeda. We finance Ahmadinejad. We finance the insurgents in Iraq. We finance the Russian government. Now, to be clear, the real enemies are the Russian government, the Iranian government, and even to some extent the Chinese government. I fear dictatorships. I fear authoritarian rulers. And while everyone was celebrating the Olympics over the last 2 weeks in China, President Bush's concerns for human rights violations in China were extremely lukewarm, extremely tepid. I understand maybe why he didn't want to pull out of the Olympics, but did he really have to go there? Did he really have to go there and greet warmly one of the most authoritarian regimes on earth? Let me suggest to you that the fact that the President of the United States did not interrupt his visit to China, did not interrupt the Olympic Games, did not come back, retreat, and say, you know what, this Russian invasion of Georgia is so important, we've got to stop everything, means, I think, we're going to have a terrible Cold War to come. You see, it not only strengthens our enemies, but it weakens our allies. Georgia was one of those countries reaching out to the West, seeking to be part of NATO. Indeed, the much larger country of Ukraine, the much more important country of Ukraine, was also seeking membership in NATO. And George Bush, just 3 years ago, was in Georgia, promising that they would not stand alone. Loud words, small stick. Empty promises. And you've got a lot of countries in the region, a lot of countries in the Caucasus, and all of them now are going to be seeking the strongest leader in the region, that of Russia. Now, I have warned about this before. If we look at some of my former shows, you can see that as recently as December of 2007, I was talking about the bad news from Russia. October of last year, I was talking about the consequences of ignoring Russia. I want to show you, though, something from 2004. It's a post dated September 29, 2004. I'm going to enlarge the type. It's called Losing the Cold War. As I said, in September 2004, we spent countless billions winning the Cold War. Our president, busy losing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, may have missed a sobering truth. He's about to lose the Cold War as well. A sobering portrait of the once and future dictator and the pal W admires, Russian President Vladimir Putin. What an opportunity. It seems that America only recognizes the opportunities we've lost after we've lost them. In the 1990s, Bill Clinton signed a deal with Kim Jong-il, and it was criticized by the right wing, but it kept North Korea from getting nuclear weapons. Then Bush came into power, didn't watch North Korea, and they got nuclear weapons, and indeed they've been selling them to our enemies. In Iran, we had an opportunity. We had a moderate president, Khatami, elected by the Iranian people, who are the most pro-American people in the Middle East. We didn't take time to worry about him. And Iran is now with Holocaust denier, someone who's talked about wiping Israel off the face of the earth. And if Israel has to then bomb Iran to try to avoid it from getting nuclear weapons, well, all I can say is another missed opportunity, another danger of war. In China, again, we had an opportunity, a massive opportunity with the Olympics, an opportunity to bring China's human rights abuses to the attention of the world. It was a time when China was on the world stage, trying to put its best foot forward. Here was our chance. Here was our chance to have countries, the United States, European Union, saying free dissidents, allow a free press. President Bush, while he was in China, should have demanded to speak to the Chinese people. And if they didn't let him speak to the Chinese people, he should have said, I'm not coming. This proves that China is not a free country. Well, perhaps our president didn't have the vision to do that kind of thing. I like to think that Barack Obama would. But we missed an opportunity. The greatest missed opportunity, though, was in Russia. The greatest missed opportunity of all was taking the other superpower, the most dangerous country in the world. Whatever you think about Iran, whatever you think about China, Russia is the most dangerous country in the world. And you know what? What an opportunity we had. In the 1990s, ruled by Boris Yeltsin, a bit of a drunk, but a man who profoundly believed in democracy, Russia could have been transformed. At least we had a chance to transform it from an authoritarian bully to becoming part of the world of nations. But we ignored Russia. We ignored it in its own peril, at our own peril, just as Putin was consolidating power, and just as he was banning democracy-minded groups, shutting down independent media. And now comes the next step, invading country of the former Soviet Union. We're going to go through all of the history this hour, and I want to hear from you. I want your phone calls. Whether you agree or disagree, I want to know. Toll free, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back with the history of the Russian-Georgia conflict after this.
Around the world, one out of every three women will be beaten or otherwise abused in their lifetime, often by a family member or loved one. A future free from violence. It's all she's ever wished for.
Did you know you have the power to stop children from joining gangs? You can help a father find a job and home for his family. You can assist a woman who can't afford the medicine she needs to live and the home she can't live without. You can choose to make a difference in our community. Support Volunteers of America, and you can help improve the lives of nearly 2 million Americans each year with programs and services that help individuals and families overcome their challenges to become as independent as possible. Support the programs that are working in our community. Contact Volunteers of America today. Call 1-800-899-0089.
For some folks, saving for the future is easy, but for you, it might take a little more effort. Saving for your future is your responsibility, and there's a lot to save for.
I never thought of that.
Like your child's education, perhaps uncovered medical expenses, or just to be sure you can live the way you want when you retire.
When I want the computer, I'll tap the computer.
Save for tomorrow. Save now or work forever. The choice is yours. Choose to save.
Here again, the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We're devoting the entire hour to discussion of the Russian invasion of Georgia, its history, its geopolitical consequences. Is it the start of the Second Cold War? What do I think the United States should do? Why are our options so limited? What does it mean? Maybe we really shouldn't care. What do you think? Toll-free number, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let me start with a map of the region. This map shows we have here the Russian Federation. Let's bring that up. We have the Russian Federation right here. This, of course, is this very big thing here. And then we have many of the states of the former Soviet Union. The largest is actually east of the Caucasus. We see the famous stans, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan. And these countries don't quite know where to go. They tend to be Islamic countries. They're not fond of the former Soviet Union, of Russia, which invaded them. And yet, they're very close. And they're not sure who is the great power in the region. They don't want to be Russia's allies, but who will they ally with? We have the eastern, the bloc near Europe. Estonia, Latvia, and Lithuania, of course, were independent countries prior to World War II. They have joined NATO. They very much want to be part of the West. We've allowed them to join NATO. Then we have these other European countries down here. The most powerful, of course, is the Ukraine, a country that was thinking of joining NATO. These countries, Belarus, unfortunately, has a dictatorship. But these countries, which border Eastern Europe, Poland and Romania and Slovakia and Hungary, these countries very much look to NATO, look to the United States. And then we have these countries in the middle, these countries in the Caucasus, Georgia, Azerbaijan, Armenia, the countries that really, let's face it, it's not clear whose side they're on. Are they part of Europe? We said, in fact, that these are countries in Europe. The Bush administration, in trying to distinguish between why it was okay to invade Iraq, but it's not okay for Russia to invade Georgia, said, well, it's not okay in Europe to just take over a country. Wrong thing to say, of course. What the Bush administration should have said is it's wrong to invade a democratic country, which, of course, Georgia was. But these countries in the Caucasus are full of all kinds of rival ethnicities. Let's take a closer look at the Caucasus. Here they are right here. We have the Russian Federation at the top. And then we have three main countries, surrounded, of course, by Turkey, Iran, and the two big seas, the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea. There's Georgia, Azerbaijan, and Armenia. Now, Azerbaijan and Armenia have already fought their own wars. There's a little area of Armenia that's claimed by Azerbaijan, and there's an area of Azerbaijan, Nagorno-Karabakh, that they fight over as well. This is largely a religious war, with Armenia being Christian and Azerbaijan being Muslim. But there are really all kinds of ethnicities in this area. If we look in the Russian Federation, what borders Georgia? Chechnya. The Chechens wanted independence from Russia. And Russia invaded Chechnya brutally, put down that independence. Now, if we look even closer at the region, we see Azerbaijan, Armenia. You can see down here Nagorno-Karabakh. This is the area of Christians that live in Azerbaijan. And you can get your own map, by the way. Just go to the internet and take a look and really look at these countries closely. And then you have all of these regions at the top, north of Georgia, which also want to break away from Russia, Chechnya and Dagestan. These are countries with Chechens and Dagestanians, and there's all kinds of ethnicities in the region. Now look at Georgia. This is a map of Georgia. Georgia has two main breakaway regions. One in the northwest, Abkhazia, and of course the most famous being South Ossetia. Now, in the history of the region, of course, Georgia was an independent nation. All of these were independent to some extent, peoples living on their own. Obviously, they developed separate identities, separate languages, sometimes separate religions. And all of them, you know, were in this region and were conquered time and again by the Russian Empire and later by the Soviet Union, until, of course, all of Georgia was under Soviet control. As I'm sure most of you know, when the Soviet Union broke apart, when it freed itself from communism, so did its satellites, so did Russia separate itself from the Ukraine and Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Azerbaijan, Armenia, Kazakhstan, and yes, of course, Georgia. Georgia became an independent nation. And the Georgians are a people distinct from the Russians. They have a different language and they have different culture. But within Georgia, there are minorities as well. There are the Abkhazians in Abkhazia and the Ossetians in South Ossetia. Now, Ossetia, there's a northern part right here in Russia and a southern part as well, and they are a separate people. When Georgia separated from Russia, South Ossetia and Abkhazia separated from Georgia. They wanted to be independent countries. There was a war, a very brutal war, that you may not even know about or remember, that occurred in 1991 between Georgia and South Ossetia and between Georgia and Abkhazia. It was an extremely brutal war, full of ethnic cleansing, which we'll talk about this hour, because ethnic cleansing is part of human history. It has occurred many times. And what it does, indeed, is it makes these regions more ethnically pure. Now, it has occurred throughout European history, and whether or not you consider Georgia part of Europe, it has occurred in Georgian history. So what happened? You have Georgia, and it became independent, and these regions of Abkhazia and South Ossetia were all autonomous regions back at the time of the former Soviet Union, as was, by the way, Chechnya. Abkhazia, South Ossetia, these were all they were all autonomous regions. They didn't have full sovereignty, but they had some of their own power. Well, they wanted that autonomy again. And Georgia, in my view, made a mistake. They responded too strongly. At that time, they came in with troops and said, no, Abkhazia, South Ossetia, you're part of Georgia. Indeed, the president at that time even did things such as cut down the head of a statue of a South Ossetian a poet. The point is that ethnicities have always fighted for control of territory. And unfortunately, during the civil war between Georgia and South Ossetia, and even more so between Georgia and Abkhazia, a country that doesn't get a lot of discussion in the media, there was ethnic cleansing. In Abkhazia, it was the worst. Abkhazia used to be a land of 90,000 or so Abkhazians and 200 plus thousand Georgians. And Abkhazia managed to murder or expel virtually the entire Georgian population. It's not clear how many Georgians are there today, but one-third of the population managed to run out, two-thirds. In South Ossetia, we do know that about a third of the population is Georgian, and two-thirds Ossetian. So what do? Here you have a small country, Georgia, that wants its independence from Russia. Okay, I get that. And then you have, in South Ossetia and Abkhazia, you have groups of people that want their independence from Georgia. Okay, minorities within a minority, I get that. But then you have in Abkhazia and South Ossetia, you have Georgians that want to be part of Georgia. Think of the Georgians of South Ossetia. They're a minority within a state, a province, South Ossetia, but they're a majority within the entire state. It gets very complicated, just as there are large Russian minorities in places like Latvia, Lithuania. One way in which human beings have ended this complication for history is ethnic cleansing. Ethnic cleansing is brutal. It's not quite genocide. The goal is not to kill everyone, but to kill or expel everyone not of your ethnic group. And let's face it, there's a reason why most of the people in France speak French, and most of the Germans speak German, and most of the Poles speak Polish, and so forth in Europe. It's because of ethnic cleansing. Indeed, after World War II, millions of Germans were expelled from the lands that became Poland, that became the Czech Republic. It's hard to feel sorry for them. These are the Germans, after all, who had just invaded these countries, brutalized these countries, committed the Holocaust. And yet these are ethnic Germans that had lived there for millions of years, for hundreds of years. But there were millions of them. We know that when India and Pakistan became countries, they exchanged tens of millions of refugees back and forth, part of ethnic cleansing. So what do when you have a minority within a minority? How do you deal with the situation? What's the right way to deal with it? It's interesting. I just came back from a vacation. I was just in the Czech Republic, and I studied the history of Czechoslovakia. And what did you have there? You had people who wanted to be free, who wanted to be Czech, but there were German-speaking people in the Czech Republic. They were a minority. They were in a land called the Sudetenland. And the Sudetenland was all around the edges of the Czech Republic, and they spoke German. So Hitler said, you know what? Give me the Sudetenland. That's majority German. They should be part of Germany. Austria, they speak German. They should be part of Germany. And then when they became part of Germany, which the world allowed at Munich in 1938, Hitler just went and took the rest. Is that what Russia's doing? South Ossetia, let's face it, in Abkhazia, they don't want to be part of Georgia. They don't really want to be part of Russia either. They want to be independent, but they fear Georgia more than they fear Russia, so they're joining with Russia. But can they really trust Russia? After all, when the Chechens wanted to be independent of Russia, Russia was quick and brutal, massacring thousands, indeed tens of thousands, brutally putting down any Chechen opposition. And now the Ossetians trust Russia? Trust Russia to help them? It's a very complex conflict. In the next few minutes, when we come back from break, I'm going to go through the history of the conflict. What happened? The trap, if you will, that Russia set for Georgian President Saakashvili, and how he fell into that trap. And how in the West we stood by. With only one Western leader, I think, really rising to the occasion. We'll talk about what happened in the past so we can discuss what will happen in the future. And what I think this president and the next president of the United States has to do to ensure the thriving of democracy around the world. This aggression cannot be allowed to stand, but what can we do? We can't fight Russia militarily. We'll get to all of that after the break. I also want to hear from you. I want to know your views. Who do you think is right? Russia? Georgia? What should the United States do? What should Europe do? 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Call in. Let me know.
Every year, 350,000 people are diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. Who will be their caregivers?
I am a caregiver.
Yo soy la que cuida a mi abuelo.
I'm a caregiver.
Call 1-800-437-2423 for a free brochure from Alzheimer's Disease Research on caring for those you care for the most. 1-800-437-2423.
I'm a caregiver. Mommy, I'm a caregiver.
Edward couldn't take long walks. He was diagnosed with a bad heart. After considering all the treatment options, his heart specialist recommended a pacemaker instead of putting him to sleep.
I don't have any good maps, I'm afraid.
Get the facts about animal research.
Just 1 hour of your time.
Here again, The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I want to discuss the history of the Russia-Georgia conflict, talk about where it came from, where it goes from here, and what we can do or should do to prevent ethnic cleansing. If you want to call in and give me your view on the conflict, I really encourage you to do so. The toll-free number is 888-48-MARK, 888-488-6275. So we know that when the Soviet Union broke apart, a very good thing for world history, I mean, we fought them in the Cold War for decades, costing trillions of United States dollars. Europe, of course, was unfree. Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania, East Germany were all under Soviet domination. Clearly, the end of that was an unequivocal good thing. And Russia was freed as well from the former Soviet Union. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Ukraine, and Georgia were all countries that had a chance to live in democracy. Well, when Georgia broke away, autonomous republics like we have here, Abkhazia, South Ossetia, those had a chance to be autonomous as well. And there was a war. Georgia fought to bring them back into Georgian control. And indeed, Abkhazia, there was dramatic ethnic cleansing. There was some in South Ossetia as well. But basically, Georgia signed a deal. They signed a ceasefire. They said that these countries could be basically independent. Not independent in the sense of a nation, but able to rule themselves. Autonomy, if you will. And the troops would stay where they were. And this ceasefire was brokered at the time. And indeed, Russian peacekeepers even were allowed in. George Bush I didn't worry too much about Russian peacekeepers because he said, well, Boris Yeltsin's a good guy. And Boris Yeltsin was a good guy. But George Bush Sr. didn't seem to think beyond Yeltsin, to think that there might be another Russian leader someday that isn't such a good guy. And to be clear, I support South Ossetian Abkhazian autonomy. I think that every people should have the right to speak their own language, to teach their own traditions. That makes perfect sense to me. But this ceasefire lasted until Russia saw that we were busy with something else. Until Russia saw that we were concentrated on the Olympics, that we were concentrated on Iraq. I think it's no coincidence that these kinds of events, that these Russian attacks, seem to occur in years, they are divisible by four. 1956 in Hungary, 1968 in Czechoslovakia, when the world is concentrated on the Olympics, when the world is concentrated on the American elections, that's when the Soviets acted. There's a reason, I think, why this happened during the Olympics, and Georgia fell into the Soviet trap. We have Alpha from Arlington on the line. Alpha, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you. I just have some questions about...
Alpha, are you there? I'm not hearing you.
Yeah, I say I have a question.
I hear you now.
Yeah, about Mr. Putin, because for me, he's the role in Russia. He's the guy who thinks he can change everything in this region. I don't know, what do you think about him? How far do you want to go?
I'm sorry, you're talking about Vladimir Putin?
Yes.
How far do I think he wants to go? I think Vladimir Putin wants to very much reassert Russian hegemony over all of the countries of the former Soviet Union, indeed over many of the countries in former Eastern Europe. These have been countries under Russian control for a long time. And I think he was very much insulted by Georgian attempts to break itself free from Russian hegemony. I mean, Georgia was very much reaching out to the West. George Bush, as I said 3 years ago, was speaking there saying that Georgia's not alone. Georgia had indeed applied to be a partner in NATO, as had Ukraine, and Russia was saying, no, we've had enough of this. Russia, I think, is a country that, well, I shouldn't say Russia. You asked about Putin. It really is Putin does not want Russia to be part of the West. The people, I'm not sure how they think. Putin has very much ensured that there will be no more Russian free elections. There will be no more Russian free press. There will be no more Russian free enterprise. He's consolidated that in his power. In fact, I think we had a tremendous missed opportunity when Russia in the 90s was under Yeltsin, and even in the early years of Putin when he was consolidating power, to stop him then, to say, wait a minute, don't shut down these independent stations. You know what? You can't be part of the G8, Russia. You can't be part of European institutions if you're going to continue to deny freedoms to your people. If we'd focused on Russia instead of focusing on Iraq, if we'd been freer from oil so that we didn't have to buy oil from Russia, if we didn't need Russia to help us against Iran, Iran, of course, also being stronger because of Iraq, if we'd been a little smarter in the geopolitical chess game, we would have less to worry about Russia. And yet, for all our worries about Iraq or even Afghanistan, Russia is a much, much greater threat. It does have, after us, the largest nuclear force in the world, the largest army in the world, them or China. This is a very dangerous country. And for us to simply ignore them and pretend that Vladimir Putin isn't a danger, I think was a real problem. I was giving the history of Russia, of Georgia separating. They allowed these lands to be independent. But it's also important to know the history of Russia. We had a chance with Russia. We had a chance to influence its outcome. I fear that chance is gone. Putin is consolidating power, and right now we're running catch-up. It reminds me, I have to say, it does remind me of Germany between the wars. Germany was destroyed very much in World War I. The people were very angry. And then Hitler built up again. There was a chance when Hitler invaded the Rhineland in 1935 to do something. There was a chance in 1938 when he took Austria and the Sudetenland. We did nothing until it was too late. And I would hope we do something now. And I have to say, I do think we can do something, not militarily, but I do think there are actions we can take against Russia. And I'll get to them in just a minute, but first I want to take another call. Araz from Fairfax. Araz, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate your analysis. I think you've hit the nail on the head on a lot of the issues. I am originally from Azerbaijan, so before I get to my question, I'd like to clarify a couple of the points that you quickly touched on the conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia. I just want to make it clear to the rest of your viewers that there is no land that is currently occupied by Azerbaijan of Armenia. And the situation is quite the opposite, and Armenia is occupying Azerbaijani land. And the conflict has no basis in religion. It's purely a territorial conflict. Now, getting to my question, we see a lot of analysts these days completely dismissing a possibility of a direct military confrontation between the United States and Russia. Could you elaborate on your view as to, over the last 60 years, we've met a Russian soldier facing an American soldier. Do you see that as absolutely no possibility at all? And if so, do you see this conflict in Georgia intervened by the U.S. through a proxy, potentially through the Georgian military being equipped to fight this war, similar to what was done in Afghanistan? And I would like to see more military intervention from the U.S. side, but do you really see that as no option whatsoever?
Well, I don't see either Russia or the United States jumping at the possibility of U.S. soldiers directly facing Russian soldiers. I think both countries shy away from that, and for good reason. This is the kind of thing that could very well escalate to a World War III, could escalate to a nuclear war. It's not something that either country wants to do. But we know from the Cold War that both countries, as you say, fight proxy battles. I mean, what was Korea? What was Vietnam, if not a proxy war? That's why I think the Russian invasion of Georgia is the beginning of a second Cold War. And I don't shy away from that. Frankly, I think it may be necessary. But I want to encourage options other than a military option. And I said at the outset of the broadcast that there was one person I was going to praise. One president, I think, who has stood up for the West, really shown leadership in the West. I think he's the leader of the West. And he's shown, in fact, that diplomacy and strong words can be combined to really come to, I think, our best option. The leader, of course, is not the President of the United States, but the President of France, Nicolas Sarkozy. I think he is if anyone can be a hero in this, the one hero. Sarkozy's agreement, I think, is a very good one. He insisted, recognized that Georgia is the weaker power, recognized that Georgia was not going to defeat Russian troops in Georgia, got an immediate ceasefire, but also got, in writing, a very important promise by Russia to leave the Georgian territories, to return to the status quo ante. Now, right now, Russia, let's face it, is ignoring it. They are violating the agreement. They are not fulfilling their promises. And Sarkozy, in a very powerful editorial written today in the French newspaper Le Monde and also reprinted in the Washington Post, has said he's not going to stand for it. As president of the European Union, there are actions that he can take, that the United States can take, that fall short of military action but could be very powerful. Russia desperately wants economic benefits. We expanded the G7, the group of seven nations, the most powerful economic nations in the world, the United States, England, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, to include Russia. They even called it the G8. Well, I think it's time that we make it clear. If Russia doesn't fulfill its responsibilities on the Sarkozy agreement, Russia, you're kicked out of the G8. I would even support sanctions, but it has to be done with Europe. One of the things that Obama made clear is that if he wins, he will have the support of not just American people, if they vote for him, but the German people and the French people and the English people and the Italian people. I just came back from Europe, and that support is real. And this will only work. The Cold War, the Second Cold War, can only work. Isolating Russia can only work if Europe is 150% on our side. And I think Nicolas Sarkozy has opened the door to do that. He's the leader in this. Certainly not George Bush, who didn't want to disrupt the Olympics when this happened. He is the leader of a united Western Front. And I think that if we can get Russia to back down, and to do so in a way that saves face. After all, Russia signed this agreement. Russia said they're going to leave. There's no need to embarrass Russia. They said they're going to leave. Okay, we make sure they leave. And we do so by saying there will be sticks. Carrots if you leave. Sticks if you do not. Not military sticks, but economic sticks. Strong economic sticks. Russia, in fact, it does not have that strong an economy. It's much far weaker, say, than China, who is the economic strong dragon. And I think that these economic sticks, with Sarkozy leading the way, because we don't have a president of the United States that can lead the way, at least not till January 20th, this is the kind of thing that could get Russia to understand that it overstepped here. And I also think, by the way, that we could give some rights to the South Ossetians and the Abkhazians. Again, it's a way of saving face. They were an independent region, an autonomous region before then. Georgia, I think, to some extent overstepped as well in going in, into these places. I think that these regions should be granted autonomy. Certainly people should be able to learn in the Abkhazian language, the Ossetian language. We should try to stop ethnic cleansing wherever we can. So they should be given autonomy, too. This is the kind of thing that a real diplomat could work in, to really sign a peace deal. In fact, the Georgians were beginning a peace deal with the South Ossetians. They had gone to negotiate an agreement, and the South Ossetians said no, because they knew Russia was behind them. Let's never forget who started this war. It was not Russia, not Georgia. It was the South Ossetians, right? They were the ones that were bombarding Georgia's positions. They were the ones breaking the ceasefire of 1991, attacking Georgian villages in South Ossetia. Then Georgia responded using strong force, and I think overreacted. And then Russia, of course, used that as a pretext to do what it wanted to do all along, to invade Georgia, not just to invade the regions here, as I show, South Ossetia and Abkhazia, but to invade throughout Georgia. Much like World War I, which started as the result of a mistake, this could grow. And the only way to nip it in the bud is with strong diplomatic leadership that I see today exercised by the President of France, that I wish were exercised by the President of the United States. Thank you for your call, both of you, Araz. And I encourage other people to call in. 888-48-MARK.
She's had more than a dozen fractures. And in the next few years, she faces two major surgeries to strengthen her fragile bones. She's only 10 years old. Most people don't worry about fragile bones until late in life. For those with osteogenesis imperfecta, brittle bones are a concern throughout their lifetime. Find out how you can strengthen this child's future.
Diabetes is a killer. After I was diagnosed, I didn't feel sick. so I didn't listen to my doctor. Then it struck. I had a heart attack, then a stroke, and I was only 49.
Most people with diabetes also have high blood pressure and cholesterol, which can cause severe heart damage. In fact, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke.
Don't let diabetes destroy your life.
Call for your free diabetes survival guide. Choose to live.
I want to thank Araz and Alpha for both their calls and encourage you to call in as well. We've got about 10 minutes more, 888-48-MARK, 888-48-6275. Let's show again a map of the Caucasus region. Araz was talking about Azerbaijan and Armenia. There is this little piece of Azerbaijan on one side of Armenia, and he points out that the Armenians are in Nagorno-Karabakh, which is, I believe, maybe Araz will call me back, but a majority Christian area, whereas Azerbaijan is a majority Muslim country. The point is, throughout the entire Caucasus region, there are lots of ethnic groups. This is a map showing different ethnic groups. You have Nagorno-Karabakh, which is almost like an Armenian enclave in Azerbaijan. You have this area down here, which is part of Azerbaijan, but not connected to it because of Armenia there. You have in Georgia, of course, South Ossetia. You have Abkhazia. You have Chechnya, which is right here, bordering Georgia. And you have inconsistent positions taken by Russia, right? Russia doesn't want Chechnya to be independent, or Dagestan to be independent, or Ingushetia to be independent. It doesn't want these regions to have autonomy, to be able to teach in their own languages, in their own schools. But the South Ossetians, who want to have autonomy from Georgia, are joining with North Ossetia, which is right here north of South Ossetia, which is part of Russia, because they want their own autonomy, because Georgia won't give them their own autonomy. Abkhazia wants autonomy from Georgia too, and I have some sympathy for that, except for the fact that Abkhazia was involved in a massive ethnic cleansing of Georgia just 15 years ago. Yes, obviously, it's complicated. As John Stewart quipped, war is just God's way of teaching Americans geography. But the geography is important, because all of the ethnic groups in the Caucasus are really not so different from all the ethnic groups in Europe. We shouldn't sit on our high horse and say, well, you know, why can't these people get along? Europe has joined together in the European Union without recognizing the long, awful history of Europe. I just returned from the Czech Republic. 2 days ago, I was walking the courtyard of the former concentration camp of Terezin, Terezinstadt in German. Here you had a fortress that was dedicated to the Empress Maria Theresa and her name used for a concentration camp. There, Europeans had their own ethnic cleansing, killing people that didn't want an independent state, just wanted to live. Jews, gypsies, homosexuals, primarily Jews. In this case, as in many cases in European history, we've had ethnic cleansing. We see it increasingly. We saw it in Serbia. Right? We had in Kosovo, we had a majority Muslim area, majority Albanian Muslim area that was an autonomous region of Serbia. And Serbia sent its troops into Kosovo and, of course, did their own ethnic cleansing, taking a land that was 90% Muslim and kicking all the Muslims out because of the 10% Serbians there, much as Germany invaded the Czech Republic ostensibly to protect the minority of Germans there. So what are we to do with Georgia? Here we have Russia invading Georgia, ostensibly to protect the minority South Ossetians, but in South Ossetia, a third are minority Georgians. What do you do when you have an ethnicity within an ethnicity within an ethnicity? Well, Rodney King once said, can't we all get along? And certainly it would be nice if we could have all these groups get along. But I think what we've seen, sadly, sometimes it takes good fences to make good neighbors. Interestingly, Europe could only come together as part of the European Union. France joining with Germany and England and the Czech Republic and the Netherlands and Belgium only after they had divided their countries under pretty much linguistic barriers, only after they fought a number of wars. I believe that each and every people should have autonomy, not necessarily independence. Sometimes it's hard to divide the lines up. But at the very least, if people get respect, the ability to teach in their own language, to teach, to have their practice their own religion, to have some venture of autonomy, then maybe we could cut down on some of these ethnic wars that have bothered human beings for millennia. Lisa from Alexandria is on the line. Lisa, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you very much. My question to you is, who holds this responsibility? Is it the private sector? You know, are we supposed to go out and create more nonprofit organizations and, you know, try to donate more books, more money to create these infrastructures of schooling systems in various nations in Africa, throughout the Middle East, you know, throughout South America? You know, what's the answer here? Or do we need more government?
It's a good question, and I don't claim to have all the answers, and that's why it's a very good question. In my view, part of it is indeed education. And obviously, I think if people are better off, then they're less likely to attack each other. But that's not all it is. Nazi Germany wasn't exactly starving. There was the bad Versailles Accord and the hyperinflation of the 20s. But many countries attack simply to get their ethnic superiority. Certainly Serbia was not exactly suffering when it invaded Kosovo. I think a lot of the answer is education. A lot of the answer is getting to know people of another ethnic group. The sadness of all of this is that in Georgia, Georgians and South Ossetians were mixing. They were marrying each other. The same is true with Shia and Sunni and Iraq. The same is true in Yugoslavia. You had Bosnians and Croatians and Muslims marrying, Greek Orthodox marrying Catholics. All of them were speaking Serbo-Croatian. What's fascinating about all of these conflicts is that they all come from having a strong central government fall apart. Usually an authoritarian central government, right? The Soviet Union fell apart. All these ethnic conflicts that had existed for centuries come to the surface. Saddam Hussein falls apart. Sunni and Shia fight. Tito dies in Yugoslavia, and all these conflicts come to the surface. I think, at the end of the day, each ethnicity is simply trying to protect its own. People are so afraid. What happened in Rwanda? You had Hutus saying that the Tutsis were doing terrible things, and Tutsis saying the Hutus were doing terrible things, and people don't know who to believe, and so they trust their own ethnic group. The same is true in Iraq. The same is true in the Caucasus. I think the answer is getting to know the other. Part of it is a free press. One of Georgia's biggest mistakes, I think, was despite the fact that it was a Western-leaning democracy and indeed a far freer country than, say, Russia, they shut down independent news stations. And by doing that, did not allow another side. They had the nationalism of wanting to ensure that South Ossetia and Abkhazia are part of Georgia without recognizing that the people of South Ossetia and Abkhazia, they also wanted to teach in their own language, to have their own schools. Sometimes I think the only answer is partition. The only answer is to allow countries to have fences and to have them protect their own. But I don't claim that there are any answers. I know, Lisa, you're back. You wanted to say something more.
I am back. I want to first of all say that I do agree with you. Second of all, I'd like for the American public, and I'm not sure exactly where your program goes, but whoever's watching your program, to understand that we are trying to do that as the U.S. military. You know, look at Afghanistan. As far as education, there's 35% females as of April 2008 that are in schools now. You know, so I just want to applaud you for getting the word out that we do need to have tolerance for various religions, you know, ethnicities. We need to silence the voices of hatred that are crying out, and we need to begin to understand one another as human beings.
I appreciate very much what you're saying, Lisa, and I also appreciate the sacrifices that many in the military are making. You're absolutely right about Afghanistan. That's a country, interestingly, that was also separated very much into various ethnic groups. Interestingly, what we did there is we had a loya jirga. We didn't use our own government. Unfortunately, we did some of that in Iraq, where we put in our own people. But in Afghanistan, we allow them to use their own ancient systems to work out details among people and to allow even a lot of autonomy. I mean, if you look at Afghanistan, the people of Kabul are very differently ruled from the people in other regions. We have a lot of autonomy. And what's fascinating to me is that by giving autonomy to the various regions, to giving the safety and security of people knowing that they will be able to teach their own language, they will be able to teach their own religion, when they have that security, then they can come together. Again, Europe is the prime example. After fighting wars for centuries, for millennia, now Europe is joining together in the European Union. I think if we teach people that they will be safe, they will be free from ethnic cleansing, they will be able to keep their own identity, then they can join together as one, which is why I wish that the South Ossetians hadn't attacked Georgian positions. I wish Georgia hadn't attacked South Ossetia, and I really wish that Russia hadn't attacked Georgia. And at this point, I'm afraid we have to take very strong action. Not military action, but very strong diplomatic action to make sure that Russia understands that this is not to be tolerated. And that, to me, requires not just words. I really fear that our administration is doing the opposite of Teddy Roosevelt, speaking loudly, carrying a small stick. The stick should be large, and the stick should be diplomatic. Russia wants all kinds of economic favors. And the sad thing is, if we didn't have such an addiction to oil, we would be a lot stronger. We could say to Russia, you know what? We have wind. We have solar power giving us electric energy, making our cars go. We have fuel cells. We have, perhaps like Brazil, biomass. We don't need your oil. And now we can say that because we are stronger, we can stand up to you and say this will not be tolerated and mean it. We could help Georgia much as we helped Afghanistan fight back against Russia. But we could do so in a way that's smart, that doesn't just aid all groups. After all, some of that aid to Afghanistan ended up coming back against us in Al-Qaeda. But helping Democrats. Because at the end of the day, I see no problem with promoting democracy in the world. The sad thing is that the Iraq War ended up, was supposedly done to fight for democracy. It was done, I think, for oil. But really, at the end of the day, we don't support democracy. We have allies like Egypt and Saudi Arabia that aren't democracies at all. Here we have a democracy in Georgia. And the Soviet troops are not just in South Ossetia. They're not just in Abkhazia. They're in Gori. They're outside of these lands. They're in Georgia. We need to take a very strong stand, but also a humanitarian stand, as Lisa said, because at the end of the day, we need to teach human beings to accept those different from them. At the end of the day, that's the only thing that can guarantee peace in the world. Hope you enjoy the Inside Scoop, Lisa. It goes across the nation at RadioInsideScoop.com and throughout the Washington metropolitan region. If you want to know more about it, go to my website, RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine, signing off.